Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I just got back from the dentist, and the dentist has told me that I need a crown because my back molar is splitting in half, like, I don't know, some sort of earthquake or something like that.
That's like something off the Rollmaster critical hit table.
Yes, totally. I did immediately have the thought of, like, you know, like, why do our TTRPG characters never need to go to the dentist? Like, why do they never need to get a $1,100 crown put on?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, my dentist is really awesome. She's like, look, I'm really conservative with these things. I don't just put crowns on for nothing. But I need to tell you up front, your insurance is not going to pay for this.
That's amazing.
Like, I was like, why? You know, and she's like, because we haven't tried to fill it yet, but if we try to fill it, it's going to act like a wedge and just crack it more. All that to say,
I didn't need to know that.
I didn't really need to know that. I mean, I guess I'm glad to know that. So insurance is like, well, why don't you try this? It did make me immediately, right? Again, this is a gaming podcast. We're not just going to talk about like our dental problems, but like it did immediately make me think about like the ripe opportunities you could have for running a game in which you are like playing a dentist to adventurers.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it might make a better video game than a tabletop game, but I mean, you could just imagine the, like, you know, like pleading with the barbarian to please wear their mouth guards, right? Like,
Really funny you should mention that, because I swear I'm not making this up. The reason I told you I have a hard stop for recording at a certain time. And that is because this afternoon I have to get over to the dentist to get a couple of, like, I mean, I just trusted him when I said, he said, we need to do this. It's like, okay, you know teeth. I do not. So sure. We'll find out. I
know. Yes. I mean, you say that, but then also, like, I mean, I'm just remembering, like, what, you know, dentistry, what used to be done by barbers, and like, you know, it's like, yeah. And like, you know, the doctors used to put leeches on us to try to get rid of our bad humors and things. It's like,
yes.
Well, I don't know. Like, looking back on it, we're going to be like, oh, dentistry, like, what was that all about?
Yeah. So do you think it balanced out, like, having your barber be your dentist and all that, and leeches and stuff? Do you think that balanced out with the fact that nobody was eating, like, processed sugars?
Yeah. That's actually a good point. Probably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fear not, listeners. Today's topic is not how do you incorporate, like, dental health into your D&D campaigns.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it does, like, I think every once in a while, and maybe when I was younger, I think I always wanted games to have, like, this, you know, like, this sort of realistic portrayal into, like, everyday life. Like, what, you're not using the restroom, like, you're not having to sit down and prepare meals and stuff like that. And, like, the older I get, the more I'm like, that is a good decision not to have any of that in your game. Stick with the power fantasy of you never have to go to the doctor, the dentist, or go grocery shopping.
Yeah, or eat, or anything like that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's funny. I had the same thoughts when I was younger. I think it must be just like a young person thing. But like, your idea is like, the ideal role-playing game is one that simulates, you know, all of the realities of life. But obviously, we don't actually want that, right?
Because
no one is like, oh, it's time to go to the bathroom. Oh, you're starting to get hungry. Oh, your tooth has been aching for the last week. What are you going to do about it, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, you had mentioned before we jumped on that you had a topic idea for us to chat about. So
I do. And we can jump into it before we start real quick. I just want to say, so I have volunteered to run a game for some teenagers in a week or so.
Okay.
I pitch it as just D&D. So that can be whatever I want to decide D&D is. And it's for my teenager plus a couple of their friends who I think have basically no experience with D&D whatsoever.
Yeah. So you've done this a few times in the past too.
So I have.
You either have not learned your lesson or you enjoy it.
I have. The answer is I've not learned my lesson. Okay, yes. Yeah. The last game I ran was for my middle school age son, and that was, we had a whole episode where we talked about what a disaster that was.
Yeah,
in maybe the best way.
Like a glorious disaster. Yeah, like a car crash, you don't want to look away.
So I mean, my experience of running for middle schoolers is middle schoolers will come to the game excited to, like, find a poop related like thing that they can just hammer throughout the entire rest of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
My limited experience with running for older teenagers is that they're more likely to come to the game with like, this is my character, and here's like the 15 pages of backstory, and they're a princess, but they went to this school and they were betrayed by this friend, and that, and these elaborate backstories. So, in what I'm trying to kind of grapple with in a practical way is, so do I run them D&D, like 5e or one of a couple of like 5e competitors, like the full rules, with the thinking of if they like this, they can, they'll be able to go to the local game store and like easily pick up a copy of this game.
Yeah.
Or do I run it with like Shadow Dark or Dungeon Crawl Classics or one of these kind of like more niche things that are really more where my personal D&D vibe lives, but you know, they'll have to go on a website and special order for someone and the shipping will be like $35.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I feel like we've talked about this in the past, although I feel like it's good to revisit maybe once a year because I feel like the landscape shifts shifts subtly.
It does.
All the time. I kind of think like I think back to the idea of like, you know, the canon, right, in literature, right? And like the nice thing about that is the idea that like you can find any American high schooler for the past 30 years and say, you know, and talk about the Great Gatsby with them. Right. Like there's just like these touch points that we sort of all go ahead and read or we all go watch. Like, you know, like everybody should, you know, in air quotes, like go watch Casablanca and you should watch, you know, like, you should read the Great Gatsby. And like, you know, there's like all these sort of things like that. And I kind of feel like if there's going to be something in the TTRPG space, it's probably fifth edition D&D right now. Right. Like, yes, it's probably like some sort of D&D game. Whether you want that to be true or not, I think it's like, it's also just sort of like, there's something that's like a good, like eat your vegetables sort of thing about that of like, here's your introduction. You have played D&D. Now, if you like that, you can go do more of that. Or you can say, that wasn't for me. I'm going to go do this other thing.
Yeah.
The problem then is like, if like a lot of high schoolers, you read The Great Gatsby and you're like, I hated that. I'm never reading again. Like that's a problem. Right. Yeah. So you want to like, So their experience with like, playing fifth edition D&D is that like, oh wow, I really did not like that. And then they're not going to touch the hobby for some number of years. And I think that's going to be probably pretty table dependent. So like, I know you're a teenager. I think they're going to enjoy D&D, but what do you think their friends are going to gravitate towards?
I mean, that's the question, right? I mean, there is something exhilarating about a complicated looking character sheet with like 500 numbers and bonuses. Like I don't want to diminish the allure of that because I think it's real, especially when you're younger and you're maybe more up for like jumping into the deep end of the pool. That said, you know, I look at something like Dungeon Crawl Classics or Shadow Dark, which have, you know, like your, there's like four numbers on your character sheet total, right?
Yeah.
And like, that's the game I want to run, a game that really only cares about like four numbers. But, you know, when I joined the hobby, it was through the, oh my gosh, this character sheet looks like a tax form.
Yeah.
It's insanely complex and I'm so intrigued. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to say what to do.
I think, okay. So I think if you're going to run, like if you're going to run the D&D style game, I think you run D&D. Like don't pick up like, sorry, Murph, but like don't do Pathfinder.
Yes.
Yeah. Like just do the thing that they've heard their friends talk about or, you know, the actual plays, like the game that they're playing. I think if you're not going to do D&D, like, you know, I think your instinct is right to reach for something that you really enjoy, right? Like, you really enjoy. That's probably still sort of within the fantasy combat-y, you know, like something like that, like whatever this Dungeon Crawl Classics or whatnot. I mean, I might not even tell them necessarily.
Yeah.
Right. Too. Like, it's just like, oh, we're going to play a game. And like, if no one's like, oh, we're playing D&D, it's just like, oh, we're just playing a game. Right. Like, I mean, I think the ideal, like the ideal, right, is you have like three sessions with them, and it's like, okay, we're gonna play, you know, D&D, and then we're gonna play a Dungeon Call Classics, and then I'm gonna like play like Fate with you or something, right? Yeah. Like, so you can get like kind of the gamut of different play styles. But my guess is whatever you run for them first, they're going to clamor for more of that.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah. Okay, so hey, let's move on to our topic. So I've got a topic to throw at you. Last time I threw a kind of vintage role-playing topic at you, and yes. I think it worked out pretty well. I enjoyed the discussion. So here's another one. Are you ready, Chris?
I don't know if I'm ready, but yeah, go for it.
Okay. Chris, how do you handle languages in your D&D game?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, well, just everybody speaks common, so everybody just keeps speaking common, please.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So here's a little background for why I'm bringing this topic up. So first of all, it's something that has never come up in our podcast, in our many episodes so far, which is...
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how or why.
Yeah.
Second of all, I mean, is there... And so it hasn't come up in our podcast. I can count on one hand the number of times in 40 years that it has come up as an issue in a D&D game I've played in or run. And yet, is there anything like more important to the human experience than language?
Right? I know, right? Yeah.
So I want to talk about like how you, so first of all, I want to hear how you use languages, and maybe the answer is you don't. And then I want to talk about, here is this rich piece of the human experience. What pieces of it can we bring into our D&D games that would add to the experience of those games? So
yeah.
So let's start with like do you use language in your games?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the most I've ever used it is probably along the lines of like you find a note in a specific language, right? Or like you're talking to your patron and you're talking in Abyssal, right? Right. Like, you know, like kind of like there's like a very specific sort of thing. But I mean, like, you're so right. It's like, I mean, even think about like dialects within a language too.
Yes.
Right. How some of them are like hard to understand if you don't, you know, if you're not familiar with it. And I mean, you know, like just look at London, right? Like you're like England, right? Yeah. Like there's just like so many different varieties of English that's spoken there. Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, I think that would be sort of the other way that it comes up is in like accents almost, right? Like, so if you're playing an NPC and you really want to ham it up, whatever, like kind of you pick your accent that they might be speaking in. Yeah, so it's not something that I have interacted with too much, I think, in D&D. And I'm trying to think if it's like ever even comes up in other games, like, right? So like it's an important part of D&D, like these like fantasy combat games, like you have a section for your languages, but like in Blades in the Dark, is it there? Like, is it there in Fate, right? Like, is it in those other systems? Like, I don't know if I've really seen it even as a line item in other games.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, it's interesting to note that it's there in D&D's earliest iterations, this idea of languages, and it continues to be in D&D, and it's like a perk of certain character classes and builds and whatnot that you have access to additional languages. And yet, you're right. I mean, you look at these different kind of spin-off games or just alternate games, and I'm struggling to think of one that makes a big deal about language in any way. And like, here's a little, let me throw out like a personal experience. I mean, so this last summer, I did a road trip with my teenager down into Kentucky. As listeners will know, we explored Mammoth Caves and stuff. And if you were to ask me, like, how did I know I had crossed into Kentucky? The answer would be, because people suddenly had strong Southern accents and they used like phrases that I associate with like Southern. So I was at the gas station. They were calling me, "Hey hun, like, what do you, you know," and stuff like that in these thick accents. And there's this like crazy traveling from like Illinois to Kentucky. There's this, at some point you cross this line and people talk in a different way. And it's not just that they have like a cute variant of English that they're speaking. It's this whole sense that like I'm in a different part of the world right now, right?
Yeah, it's, and especially if you're doing like car travel too. It's like you get, like, you know, you gas up in central Illinois and then you get down to yeah. Kentucky, and it's like, yeah, this is like, again, this is might be the most Midwestern conversation we've ever had. but like, yeah, like it is a very real thing. I've experienced that too, of like, you know, I was visiting a friend in Tennessee one time, and it was just like, yeah, like I gassed up in Ohio and I got down to Tennessee, and it was just like, you step out and you're just like, I'm not in Kansas anymore, right? Like, yeah, like you're just like, yeah, everybody's sort of talking differently. Like there's different signage, different flags flown, I will say, you know, like, yes. You know, like that sort of stuff. Yeah, but it's like, it's so palpable, but it's also like, it's not something that like the people around you are remarking on either, I guess. Like, and that's, I think that's the big thing with language. It's like, especially if you are the outsider stepping into a place, it's not something they're going to be like, you know, like, oh, by the way, you know, we speak, like, we have a Southern dialect down here, right? It's something that you're clocking, right? As like as a person. I think that'd be hard as a GM to really get across, but I think it would give a lot of flavor to the locations. If there was like little stuff that you could be like everybody's using this sort of phrasing, in this town. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the phrasing more than just like, okay, I'm in a part of the country where there's a different dialect. I mean, there's these cultural ideas that we attach to the dialect. So so paying the gas station attendant for my like Cheetos in Kentucky, I felt like I was being treated more warmly and more politely than I was if I was buying Cheetos in like Chicago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's these aspects to language. I mean, language is, you can't pull it apart from like kind of the culture and the cultural stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And like, so just to go all the way back to the beginning of this question, I've basically never used language in a role-playing game. Like I follow like sort of Hollywood cinema language rules, which is that if the PCs need to interact with someone, he, she, they, it speaks, like, you know, some sort of at least broken version of English.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like enough that they have no trouble conversing and getting the point and making the point. And it just feels like I'm missing something.
That's okay. So this is, I've got like sort of two things. So I'll start with like one rules-based stuff. Like, I wonder if like the history of D&D having this goes back to like chainmail and like the war games that they were playing. At the time, because my guess is, right, language in like a war game is going to be more important, right? Like just from like a, like, I don't know, you intercept some enemy's message, but it's written in German. Do you know how to speak German? Right. Like some of those sorts of things, or even, yeah, just like, or like the German army, like, right. Like there's just language is so built into, language and nationality is built into like the conflict that's happening in those. So that's just like sort of a, I'm not a D&D historian, so I don't know the answer to that, but it is something that I'm kind of interested in now thinking about. But going back to you, Andy, as a person, I know for a fact that you study languages and like, you, like, yeah, would you call yourself, have you ever been fluent in a second language
other than English? Maybe with a couple of them. So when I was in college and grad school, I studied a ton of languages and I love language. And there was a point in those. I mean, now I'm like a almost 50-year-old dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of these skills have atrophied. But there was a point at which I could have conversed with you in a large number of languages.
Yeah.
And my, like, here's something else to throw out there. You know, I don't think there is any, I think it is one of the most sublime human experiences to interact with someone that doesn't speak your language, but achieve an understanding, whether it's like the train teller, like the guy in the train customer service booth in like Berlin or whatever, who like, you don't speak each other's language. You have to both work to achieve an understanding that exists outside of either of your languages. Like that is an incredible human experience.
Yes.
And I have no idea how I would replicate that in D&D.
Yeah. Yeah. Like as you're speaking, I'm just thinking about like this shop owner that I interacted with in France. Right. Like, it's just like, yeah, like those things sort of stick with you, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause it
and
is
when
like,
you achieve understanding, I mean, you have smiles on your faces, right? Yeah. I mean, like it's a thrilling experience.
Yeah, it's very universal. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to do that at the game table without it feeling like, I don't know, too cutesy or, yeah, or like diminishing of what's going on. Because it's like, you're interacting with someone who is a smart, intelligent person who just, like, you don't know their language, right? Like, so, yeah, so it's not going to be like, I don't know, like you're interacting with like a caveman who doesn't know anything, right? Like, and you're trying to figure out like what to call a rock or whatever. It's like, no, you're interacting with someone who's probably like a little bit frustrated, right? Like,
yeah
frustrated because, I mean, they probably know how to, you know, do everything in their language, you know, that you do, that you clearly can't, right? So it's like, I think there's a delicacy there that you'd want to, you know, want to strike. I mean, I'd be really fascinated to hear this question answered by like someone who's an immigrant, right? Like into another country, right? Because I think there's like you're mentioning with those, like those small moments of like trying to figure out like how to, you know, buy a ticket for a train or something in a different language. Like, that's one thing, but trying to like live and breathe and eat like in another language where like you do have a language barrier. I mean, I think that's just like, I don't know. Like, I'm in awe of people that can handle that. But I mean, like, yeah, but going back to at the table, it's like, you know, I mean, I think the easy answer is, right, like, you pick up this note, it's in some goblin tongue. Like, you know, do any of you have this language, you know, language? Yeah. If not, now you got to go find someone that does. Right. But I think the thing that you're getting at is a more core experience, core human experience, and a much cooler experience if there's a way to do it at the table.
So how do you do that? I mean, the default way of answering the question of, do you achieve your goal? Like, do you achieve a mutual understanding with this goblin that only speaks goblin?
Yeah.
Is a die roll, right? And
yeah,
that's like one of the reasons, maybe subconsciously, I don't use language at the table is because it feels like there's no way to implement this part of human, of like existence, without reducing it to like some boring die rolls or maybe some boring penalties.
Yeah.
And I like, and as a GM, I don't like situations that like basically just boil down to, yeah, the PCs have like a penalty on their die rolls when doing this sort of thing. That's really boring. It's tedious. It's like dumb. So like, to me, you know, establishing communication with that goblin is like solving a puzzle together, right? It's like you're both working at a puzzle and like adding your pieces. But in like your D&D game, is there a way to capture that, like, we're working together to achieve understanding that doesn't boil down to like, okay, make an intelligence roll?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, I mean, I'm thinking about a scenario in which the one party member who knows goblin also has some sort of ulterior motive, right? Like, and, you know, sort of thinking about that, because like you have the like communication that's happening where you're just sort of trying to figure out what each other's saying, but I think there is also like some opportunity for them, the translation part of that too, to add some drama and interest there, because it's like, okay, so the goblin tells the whatever, your warlock, that like, hey, you know, if you come over here, like, you know, you'll avoid this trap. But if you go that way, like, there's some treasure over there. And the warlock turns to the party and then says, like, oh, he says, like, we absolutely can't go the trap way. We have to go towards this way that has all the treasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, right. Like, you know, so there's like that side of it. Yeah. And then I don't know how you could then maybe you can work in the die roll for someone else who doesn't know goblin, but like has heard a couple of phrases or something like that, or can pick up on body language. Then they could make the die roll of like perception. Like, did you pick up on like this hidden information?
Yeah, interesting. Would you ever do something like, okay, you're talking to the goblin, you know a little bit of goblin but not much, like, here's what the goblin says, how would you, with your level of fluency in goblin, understand what he just said? Would you ever ask, like, throw it to the players to like decide that?
I like that. Yeah, I think I would. I mean, yeah, now that you mentioned it, I think I absolutely would. Like, yeah, like, do you understand? Yeah, like, you know, did you learn like academic goblin, and like, this is like, he's using a bunch of vocabulary that you've never heard before.
Yep.
You know, those sorts of things. I mean, I think there's a lot you could play with there. If you just took, if you like in many things with running games, if you could take 15 minutes beforehand to sort of just brainstorm out like little ways in which you could make this encounter interesting. I think that there's a lot that could emerge from there. The goblin also knows a few English words, but like someone taught him the wrong vocabulary for a handful of like really important words.
Or like, you know, what if you like, okay, it says, you know, goblin on your character sheet. So how did you learn it? Right. Mm-hmm. Did you learn it from like a stuffy sage's like textbook on the grammar of the goblin language? Mm-hmm. Did you learn it because you were like imprisoned by goblins for a year and you had to pick up their like everyday slang to get through, you know, like, and how would that affect your like actual fluency, right? Like what, like your vocabulary that you know is not just a matter of like how many words do you know, but like what types of situations are you equipped to like interact in the goblin mm-hmm. language, yeah. and what types are not.
Can I make a reference to like a 30-year-old movie?
Please, yes. Oh, that's what we're here for.
I know, yeah, right. Have you so this is a movie that I think does hold up. Have you seen Better Off Dead with John Cusack?
Oof.
You probably have.
Maybe back in like high school.
Yeah, there's the thing that everybody will remember from Better Off Dead, if you remember anything, is that there's like this hallucination dream sequence where he imagines like his hamburgers dancing and singing. Yeah, it's like this great, great claymation. So anyway, there's a side character in that movie who learned English from watching the Wide World of Sports, like so, like this like sports program. Oh. So like imagine if you like if the way that you learned English was watching Sports Center, right? Like the way that you would enunciate would be a lot of like yelling, right? There'd be a lot of like football references, like you know, things like that. I mean, I love that. Like I don't know how exactly you pull that off, but I mean, I think there's, you know, like some really subtle ways you could work in some interest to that character.
And so it's my turn now to make a decades old entertainment reference. So there's a famous episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation which captures a language type experience that like I would love to see at like my gaming table, but how do you do it? Have you seen the episode where Picard is like stuck on the planet with this species of alien, like their translators don't work because the cultural underpinnings of the language are alien to English's. And like, mm-hmm. so here's, I forget what the episode is called. It's like Darmok, whatever. So pause and go Google like Star Trek Next Generation language episode. Mm-hmm. Anyway, like what it boils down to is this other language, they can understand the words, like you can understand the words that they're saying, but the language is built on references to their own history. Oh. So you don't say, we should fight the monster. You say, we should be these two historical figures. And like, you're supposed to know, oh, those two historical figures fought a monster together. So that's what's being said. And like, that's the end point of the episode when, you know, the heroes realize, oh, they're referencing historical characters or mm-hmm. events that like mirror in some way what's going on, and so suddenly we can start interacting.
That's
so
great.
Like, you know, that's a pretty contrived scenario. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, what if the dragon language is not like you have to learn just all the dragon vocabulary and verb you know, and like declensions and that sort of thing of the dragon vocabulary.
500 words for horde.
What if dragon like vocabulary is like based on the great dragon hordes of mm-hmm. their history, right? Yeah. And like each referencing a horde carries with it all these implications and flavors mm-hmm. and nuances that are totally lost if you just translate the word as like golden horde, right?
That's good. I don't know, it seems like what we're narrowing in on is the interest in language at the game table should not just be in like a do you understand the vocabulary, but much more like do you understand the culture behind it. Yeah, and like I mean that's like right, that's always going to be worthwhile, I think, to take a minute to think about. Like, yeah, just the culture that your NPC is coming from, before you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, yeah, I think that would make, I mean, it could add just enormous depth to like the next hobgoblin encounter you have.
Mm-hmm.
If like they're barking orders to each other during the fight, but they're orders that differ from, you know, the common language, not just in vocabulary, but in sort of cultural history and assumptions.
Yeah.
I mean, like the big question is, how do you, you know, is there a way to take that from being, ooh, that's really interesting to me, the GM, I know, you know, to, hey, to something that's interesting for the players to interact with?
Yeah, that is a super good question. I mean, I think, again, it'll probably depend on the table. I do think this is one area where you only need a few of those things, right? So you don't need to have, like in the Star Trek episode that you mentioned, right? I'm sure the writers did not come up with like a 1,000-year history of, right, you know, of these peoples. They just sort of picked like three things, right, that they could, yes, like use to reference.
100%,
I think,
yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably all you need for the most part. And then if your players are really latching onto it, you can come up with more from there. But if there's just like a handful, like the hobgoblins you're talking about, like if they were, yeah, if they're referencing like, you know, like fight like Ukthar, you know, Ukthar did, you know, back in the day, you know, or like, you know, reference like a few things along those lines, I think that's probably enough. Yeah, like you don't have to do this like, yeah, this is like deep dive into it all, right? And like, you know, some of your players are going to be jerks about it and they're going to ask you, like, they're going to like seeing how far you can go with it. But I mean, I think, yeah, taking a little bit of time to have those three things at hand will be enough.
So, like, so let's wrap this up, because, yeah, again, I have to get to the dentist soon.
Yes.
But, so, like, what about, like, accents? So I feel like as much as in, a challenge where you have to speak goblin to the goblin raiders that are trying to ambush you, you know, as you travel, I mean, obviously, language variants are an amazing way to convey, like, the flavor of a local area. Like, how would you convey an accent? Would you use like you're a native English speaker. Would you use like one of the different English accents to, if they arrive in whatever port town, would you use a cheesy Southern accent to convey to them those cultural ideas behind like what a Southern accent means to an American English speaker? What would you do? Or would you just say, this NPC speaks in a really strong accent, and then deliver his lines in your own dialect?
Yeah, it depends, I think, on how much energy I have at that point in the session, like, to put towards it. I find it really hard to start an accent and keep it going, personally. Like, I think that's just, like, I don't have enough actual performance background for theater to, like, to pick an accent and stick with it. I think the most that I tried to do that was, like, running Strahd one time, right? Like I really tried to nail that accent as much as possible. And I don't think I was super successful, but, like, you know, I did give it an honest try. I do think you can do a lot with, so, like, the stuff that I think everybody can modulate easily enough is, like, volume and speed are probably the two. Right. So, like, you don't need to nail like your Scottish accent or whatever, like, completely, but like you can probably slow down your speaking or speed it up really fast or like get louder or get quieter. Right. Like, you can do some of those things really easily. And I think that's also easy too. So if you have an NPC that's going to come back around, you can write those things down really fast too. Like, and I've done that before where you're just like, oh, this person, right, speaks loudly, you know, like is very boisterous, right, really dour, like whatever, like give yourself a few things to where you can slip back into that. Cause again, you don't have the same problem that, say, like, I don't know, Matt Mercer does, where like someone's going writing a wiki about like everything that you're doing, right? Like, just like you're running at the table. Like, if you just give a little bit of like flavor to your NPC, that's probably going to be enough.
Yeah. I really like that. I really like focusing on things like volume or speed that anyone can do, whether you can pull off a Southern accent or not.
Mm-hmm.
You can speed up your sentences a little bit or slow them down a little bit, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I joke around with my family that all my role-playing accents converge on what I call Russian Mario. Over time, any NPC accent I do will eventually sound like Russian Mario. So,
And here we go, comrade.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
Cool. So, yeah. Okay. Well, hey, we need to wrap it up just because of time. But do you have any final, like, so have you been in a game or run a game where some kind of language-related challenge or experience rose to the top?
I can't think of anything offhand, other than like memorably funny accents that people sort of did at the table. Yeah. So, I mean, it's something I'm like, after having this conversation, like many of our conversations, I'm pretty interested in. And I mean, it's also a good reminder. It's like, if it's on a character sheet somewhere, someone probably spent a lot of time thinking about it. So like maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe see if you can pull it into your game.
Well, I have to say my takeaway from this conversation is your final point that you're making, that just one or two little tweaks to the way you deliver dialogue is all you need. You don't need to master a Scandinavian accent. You just need to like just do something to give an NPC like a unique feel, and then I don't know, that'll I do think that will settle into like the player consciousness, mm-hmm. and you can run with it.
Yeah, like two things about their culture's history and two things about like how they speak, and it's like that's gonna be enough.
Cool. That's fantastic advice right there. Okay. Yeah. Well, hey, let's wrap up. Did you have any like kind of outro things we needed to clear up?
The only thing that I really want to make sure I mention is about the Splat book. So I'll do that in kind of our closing stuff. So this has been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network, our sister show, The Splat Book. The Splat Book with, I guess it's just John Corey now, is the official host. So Kyle Latino has, he's stepping away. He's taken a job doing something else, which I'm sure we'll start to hear a lot more about soon. He's under various NDAs and things like that. But it's with Larian, so the people that Baldur's Gate 3. So he's going to be working with them on an unnamed project that he cannot tell us the name of quite yet. but unfortunately, that means that he needs to step away from the Splat Book. So I just listened to, just a couple days ago, I listened to their final episode. If you're a fan of the Splat Book, they have this thing called Cut Bitlets. So this is just all the stuff that sort of doesn't make it into the final episode. They just did an episode full of that, and it made me very happy to listen to those two talk. It's just just a wonderful run. I also know, I've been talking with John about this. He has like so many good ideas for what's going on into the future. Yep. Like, Splat Book is not done at all, right? Like, so Kyle stepping away, I would be surprised if he's never like, you know, if he doesn't come back at some point for, you know, like specials or whatever like that. But John is gonna go on with it, so please keep listening. And I think Andy, you recorded with him recently too, right?
I did. We recorded kind of a spinoff episode on Alien Romulus, the most recent Alien movie, which you saw, right, Chris? You saw
Which I saw. And if you didn't have to go get all of your teeth pulled, I would stop it right now. We'd have another 20-minute conversation about Alien Prometheus, Alien Romulus. So anyway, go listen to The Splat Book. It's super great. You can find them at thesplatbook.com. But I think that does it for us. So cool. All right. Well, I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.